All right. Welcome back to the Forfeit Fatherhood Podcast, the podcast for fathers by fathers, where we talk about the four pillars of fatherhood, which are faith, family, finance, and fitness. And I'm excited to have another guest joining me today. I know you guys get tired sometimes of hearing me talk to myself or preach at you. So I'm always excited to have a conversation to talk to another dad. I mean, that's how this whole thing started, is getting the opportunity to talk to another guy who's kind of going through the same thing. So my guest today is Jimmy DeFalco. Jimmy, how you doing, brother?
I'm doing well, man. Thank you so much for having me, Ryan. I really appreciate it, man.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk to you, man, because one, obviously you're doing good work in the fatherhood space, and it's always good to talk to somebody who's working in that space, because you understand some of the same things that I'm dealing with or facing. But then just also always talking to another father and getting those experiences, because I think the more shared experiences we get as fathers, the better we can kind of be efficient in our own fatherhood. So I'm excited to talk to you a little bit and hear what you got going on and hear a little bit about your fatherhood journey.
Appreciate it, man.
Yeah. So Jimmy, tell us a little bit about yourself for guys that don't know who Jimmy DeFalco is. Who's Jimmy?
Yeah. So my name is Jimmy. I'm a father of two young boys. Anthony is 9. Angela literally just turned 7 on Wednesday, and I'm a recovering addict. So I was raised by a father who taught me the wrong way to do everything, right? I like to say I was raised in like a Wolf of Wall Street type of environment, because my dad made a lot of money, like 7 figures every year. I lived on a house, on a lake, boats, jet skis, 60-foot yacht, limos, thought I had the dream life. But my dad was also partying a lot with alcohol, drugs, women. A lot of it was done in front of me. So, you know, when I graduated college, I thought I was going to take over my father's business, make more money, party harder than he ever did. But in 2008, right after I graduated, my father lost everything. It sent me down the dark path of addiction, alcoholism for about a decade. And 6 years ago, I finally said enough is enough and turned my life around. And that kind of brings me here to where I am today.
Man. So I that's interesting, you know, the fact that your father was doing so. And so what happened in 2000, was it the same thing as the rest of the country in 2008, just the whole market crash? Or?
Yeah. So my dad owned an automotive advertising agency, and the two, I think, industries that got hit the most were like the housing and the automotive. Right. And so he had a bunch of clients that were, you know, 120 days out on invoices. They just couldn't pay him. And even though he was making 7 figures per year, he was spending 7 figures a year. Right. He didn't think that well was ever going to dry up. So when it did, and we had the limo, the yachts, the houses, all these condos, you know, the money dried up pretty quickly. So I went from never having to worry about finances and where we were living and whatnot, to literally barely being able to buy groceries and, you know, pay our rent on like a tiny apartment. And it was a super hard transition for me. And my father actually at the time was in a lot of trouble with the IRS. So we opened up a new business in my name to try and, you know, just keep the money coming in, just transfer the clients from one business to another. About a year and a half in, I realized my father wasn't paying the payroll taxes. I owed like 40 grand to the IRS in payroll taxes. I shut down the business. Me and my father actually physically fought like at that time. We didn't speak to each other for a couple of years, but yeah, it was basically the automotive crash. But I truly believe my dad, if he wasn't like using so many drugs, he would have been able to come back from it. But unfortunately, he just, you know, didn't have the ability to do so.
Man, that's tough. That's tough. So when you say that he taught you all of the wrong things, obviously with the drugs and the partying and all those things that you mentioned, I mean, not a lot of us get to see a father build a business to 7 figures or you know, get to have jet skis and houses on the lake and all those things. So there had to be something there that you did get from him, that he taught you some of those lessons that maybe in spite of sometimes the things he was doing, or maybe, you know, something that you just gained from him just being around him and seeing him, how he worked and how he did things. Were there any things that you picked up that maybe you can attribute to your dad?
Yeah, for sure. Even though my father you know, taught me a lot of bad things in regards to drugs and partying and just like how to be a man. He taught me a lot of good things as well. And I realize now at this point, I held a lot of hate and resentment towards him, but he did the best with what he knew at the time. He was just literally doing his best with how he was raised, because he was raised the same way. But my dad taught me a lot. I would say the most thing, hard work and belief, like belief in yourself. My father just out of nowhere, he's like, hey, I'm going to run a marathon, and just fucking decided and did it and ran a marathon. He goes, hey, I'm going to become, you know, a boxer. And he became a semi-pro boxer. You know, he just like found something that he wanted to do. He decided this is how he was going to do it. He hired, you know, the best coaches and mentors in that space and, you know, worked his ass off until he was able to finally bring that to him. So like the unwavering belief, no matter anything else that was going on, was the main thing I took away from my father.
I mean, that's huge though. You know, that's the thing that, that a lot of us struggle with, is that one, believe in yourself. And then two, just to continue to believe in yourself, even when things aren't going the way that you want them to. I think that's a huge lesson for all of us to take and work with. So I thank your dad for that, because he just hearing you say it like, okay, yeah, I do need to continue to believe in myself. So that's awesome. All right. So
yeah,
you
I
got
do my
the
best
two.
To really, I'm sorry, go ahead, man.
No, please.
Yeah. And I do my best to like pass those along to my boys as well. My father, God rest his soul, he passed away about 2 weeks ago. But you know, I do my best to break those generational patterns, that the negative ones that he did me, but I'm also doing my best to give my boys that belief and confidence within themselves. And if they don't see me having belief and confidence in myself, and my abilities, taking risks, starting my business, helping other men, doing big things, they're never going to have belief in themselves.
Yeah, that's actually where I was going with it. I was going to say, do you take that and then, you know, try to teach your sons the same thing, right? To kind of believe in themselves and some of those things that you realize now, you know, maybe even realize then, but looking back at like, oh, I don't want to show my son those things. So I'm going to kind of go on the other side and make sure I show them these things that I think are more productive.
Yeah, exactly. And so I like to talk with a lot about my clients. So I run this program called The Awakened Father, where I help men become the best version of themselves. And I like to talk about a lot about the belief cycle, right? So if you start off doing something with like a limited belief in yourself, like just inherently, you're going to take limited action. Right. And then with that limited action, you're going to get limited results. So what is that internal talk going to be like, Rod? It's going to say like, hey, I told you couldn't do it. I knew you couldn't do it. And then so you try again with even less belief, less action, less results. So it's just like a self-fulfilling cycle at that point.
Yeah. Yeah. That's funny, man. I just saw a meme yesterday. And it's like a guy riding a bike up the hill, and he's riding up, and it's like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, he's at the top of the hill. But then Thursday, Friday, Saturday, he's coming back down that hill, right? Like he started up on a mission, right? Got to a point where it got a little bit more difficult and decided to come back down. And I can see, you know, starting off with a limiting belief like that definitely would hamper your ability to move forward. So just talking about that, right? So we're talking about you work with your clients on that, and I would hate to skip past that. What or how do you get them to overcome those limiting beliefs?
Yeah, so limiting beliefs are really like formed in the subconscious mind, right? And until the first step is identifying like what limiting belief you have, right? Second step is identifying the event that really brought on that limiting belief, whatever it is, unworthiness, unlovable, not good enough, right? What event? We can't change the events that happen to us, but we can always change the meaning that we associate to those events, right? So I have a lot of different like meditation practices, journaling practices that allow my clients to reframe the negative, right, events that happen to them, and that used to create these limiting beliefs to hold them back, to empowering ones. Right. Mm-hmm. So I found all of these like experiences that I had with my father when I was a kid that led me to believe I was unworthy. I was not good enough. I couldn't do it. And I think that's why I went down the path of addiction. Right. So once I started working with my own mentor about 5 years ago, I was able to identify those like major events that subconsciously I never even really thought about again, and reframe the meaning of those events to create an empowering belief rather than a disempowering one. And that's kind of the process that I walk my clients through.
Yeah, that's powerful. That is definitely a shift of mindset that could put you on the right path, whatever that path is, right? So that's awesome. Let's talk a little bit about your fatherhood journey. So you say your oldest is 9?
Yeah, he's 9. Yep.
Okay. So roughly 10 years ago, you find out you're going to be a father. So what was that experience like for you? You find out you're going to be a dad for the first time. Where were you at? What were you thinking? How was that?
Yeah. And I don't think I've shared this in a long time, ever since maybe 5-6 years ago. And honestly, Rod, I told you I'm an open book, so I'm happy to share it, but I'm honestly embarrassed about how I reacted and how I responded to this. But I think it's important to share because it just shows the contrast of really who I used to be to who I am today. So at the time when I found out this, the girl I was dating was pregnant with Anthony, I was like an alcoholic. I was a drug addict. I was partying, doing a lot of coke, living downtown in a high rise. And when she said she was going to have the baby, I freaked out, right? I told her, we can't do this. You have to get an abortion. No way. And she's like, no, I'm not doing that. And so I talked to my dad, like the, you know, good role model that he was. I'm like, what do I do? And he's like, tell her you're not going to be around. She'll get scared and she won't have the baby. And as fucked up as that sounds, Rod, that's what I did for like 2 or 3 months. Until I finally came to the realization that, hey, she was going to move forward with this baby. Thank God she didn't. She didn't give in because Anthony changed my life forever. And then I took the next couple of months apologizing, begging, eventually, you know, got back with her and, you know, started down that path of fatherhood. So I really wasn't cut out to be a father like at all when Anthony was born. For the first 2 years of his life, I was a drug addict.
Oh man. Well, like you said, thank God that she went forward with it, right? Because fatherhood is a transformational moment in your life, regardless of where you're at, right? Like it may not happen right away, but at some point, being a father or fathering a child has a way of putting you or putting life into perspective. So those first couple years, you know, you're still struggling with your addiction and trying to figure that whole thing out. What eventually causes you to like, you know, call it quits and shut it down and get to where you are now?
Yeah, it's a great question. So for up until Anthony was born, it was a lot of like drinking coke, like the party scene, right? After we moved out of downtown, like all that partying was taken away from me and I quickly shifted to like opiates and Xanax. I could function with like alcohol and coke. Once the opiates and Xanax got a hold of me, I couldn't function for anything. You know, and at the time when I found out that Angelo, so 2 years later, I found out that she was pregnant again with my second son, Angelo. And at this time, I'm literally at my father's house on a week-long bender, right? Just not partying, having fun, just like us two in the dark, snorting pills, like being miserable. And I found out that I was going to have a second kid. And at this time in my life, I thought my life was over at that time. And I can only describe it as a spiritual experience. So I remember, Rod, like falling to my knees, like literally just crying, screaming, like asking God, like, why? Like, why me? Why I can't take care of one son. I can't take care of myself. How the hell am I supposed to take care of a second son? I was asking him, like, why me? How am I supposed to do this? And then almost in that instant, my whole entire life, I blamed everything on my dad, on the economy, on God, on bad luck. But in that moment, it almost instantly shifted to where it like hit me like a bullet to where I immediately took accountability for where my life was at. And Rod, that was so painful. Like I got goosebumps on my arm right now thinking about it. That was so painful that I eventually just tried to take my life. I started slitting my wrist. I think it was superficial, just trying to get attention somewhat. But my friends called, they had me Baker acted. I was in a mental health facility for like 72 or 96 hours. And when I was in there, at that point, I really didn't care what happened to me. But like, I had this dream that my kids were going to turn out just like me if I continued down this path. So I made the decision when I walked out of that hospital that I was never going to use again. And I never picked up and used hard drugs ever again after that. And that accountability shift, it goes back to like the subconscious mind. Cause at our age, we're 95% of everything we do is driven by our subconscious mind. So I subconsciously took the drugs from like an escape, happiness, you know, a getaway to now I associated the drugs with pain, heartache, turmoil, ruining my life. So yeah, it was hard to quit still, but I think that like that subconscious shift I made internally was like 80 to 90% of the work.
Man, one hell of a story right there, bro. Like, I'm glad that, I think, you know what? I think everything that happens, happens obviously for a reason, right? All those things that you went through and all things that you will continue to go through in your life are all a part of the process. They're all a part of the journey. And I think when we're in the middle of it, we're in the middle of the storm. We're like you said, why is this happening to me? Like, what is going on? But I think somehow, some way, right, for those of us that are blessed enough to do so, we find a way through it. And then it becomes the power that pushes us forward. Right. Because like you said, your mindset shifts. And then all of a sudden it's like you're not invincible. Right. Not invincible at all. But you have a superpower that nobody else has.
Exactly. And now when like I've been through so many things in my life, so much adversity, so much pain and heartache. Even since I got clean, you know, 6 years ago, that now when I'm faced with adversity, I already know. I'm like, whether a week, a month, a year from now, like there's going to be a lesson in this. I'm going to be a better man to raise my kids better, lead my family better, and help other men because of what I'm going through now. So it almost allows you to like look for like the blessing in the adversity that you're going through. Once you've been through it enough, like you just said, right? I wouldn't change anything that I've been through because it brought me exactly where I'm here today, talking to you, the man. It's like if I got the life that I wanted, got to ran my father's business, partied, and lived his life, I wouldn't be half of the man that I am today.
Yeah, yeah, it's amazing that you know we have these plans for ourselves, and God has others, right? Like we think of all the things that we want to do. And then God's like, okay, that's cool. That's a cool idea, but let's do this first.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But I think, you know what, though? I think even though you had kind of those designs on doing some of those things, you know, running your father's business and partying all the same ways that you know, he partied and that you were partying yourself, I can imagine that life right now is sweeter than you thought it would be, even with all that partying that you imagined. You know what I mean? Like being able to be the man that you are right now and experience the life that you have with your family and with your kids. And I can imagine that is way more than you bargained for.
100%, man. I couldn't have imagined like just being the type of father I am today, you know, 5, 6, 10 years ago. Because I wouldn't have had the experiences that have shaped and molded me. You know, to who I am today. And I wouldn't be able to raise my kids with the same type of mindset, mentality, and belief systems that I'm raising them with. And then I'm, you know, working on other men with. So like the most rewarding thing is to see the men that I work with say, hey man, like the other day I was like doing my meditation or I was like doing burpees in the garage and my son came out. He's like, Dad, can I meditate with you? Can I do burpees as well? And like, that's like what it's all about, like right there, being able to like impact other men so it impacts their kids. And it's like, you know, you're changing generations to come. If you can really impact just one father, they can impact their kids and it's just a ripple effect from there.
Yeah. That's what I really like about this whole fatherhood space and the work that we're able to do is because as much as I want, I can infect the people in my household, right? I can teach them all the things that I want them to know. I can help them, lead them, guide them, grow them, right? Yeah. But at some point they leave this house, right? And so if I'm not also impacting the community, the neighborhood, you know, the city, the state, then my children are going to be faced with a world full of other children who are raised by people maybe not so ambitious of their children, right? And so,
yeah,
that's what I love. Like when I get messages or when I'm talking to a guy and I'm talking to a father, and he's like, "Man, this stuff is amazing. You know, it's working." And that part is like more fulfilling than I ever expected. You know, like I've done some stuff working with some athletes and had athletes win Super Bowls and gold medals, and all these things are really cool. But you know, and I'm happy for them and I'm excited, but the first time I had a young dad reach back out and go, "Hey man, I appreciate everything you told me." Like it was definitely what I needed to hear. And it pushed me forward in a way that I didn't imagine. And I was like, "Man, that's better than a Super Bowl ring. You know, that's better than a gold medal, you know?" Because I know that's going to ripple through time, through his kids, his grandkids, you know, changing the trajectory of his family tree.
100%, man. You can literally just change the lineage, right? If you take someone who's, you know, fat, lazy, unmotivated, no purpose, right? And you can change that for them, their kids are going to live completely different lives, become completely different men and women. And like you said, bro, that's literally what can get better than that? What other feeling do you have that's better than like changing a family's lineage? It's pretty crazy to even talk about.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Let's jump back to your family. So you got the two boys. I don't have boys. I've only got girls. And so I don't know what the boy dad life is like. Working with athletes, I know, and in this age, especially that 9 to 7, and they're full of energy and they're all over the place. But like, what is dad life like with two sons?
Dude, it's nonstop, man. Like they, I was on a live yesterday and they're like, "Oh, like when you bring your kids to the gym, are they tired later?" I'm like, "No, they're never tired." So I coach both of their baseball teams. And so I actually, if season starts or practice starts tomorrow, actually, so it's a lot of, time on the baseball field. So tomorrow I'll be on the baseball field from like 5:30 to 8:30 at night, a couple times a week. And then Saturdays for like 4 or 5 hours as well. But it just goes back to the point that I talked about before. I get to be with my kids, do what I love, baseball, and impact the other children as well. So it's a fine line between, I find myself, because my dad raised me, it's not okay to show emotion. It's not okay to be vulnerable. You should lose your temper, get mad, rage. That's what I thought like a man was, right? So I find myself sometimes still subconsciously portraying like that tough guy mentality to my boys. And yeah, it is important to be tough. I am like that alpha male, loud, like shut up, do the work type of guy, but I'm also very vulnerable, emotional. So it's a fine line between pushing them and motivating them to be better and their best selves, but also maybe taking a little bit of like that feminine approach as well with them and not being too hard on them. And realizing that they are just 9 and 7 years old. And kids these days, they're so smart with the internet and everything. I sometimes forget that they're just 9 and 7, right? So I think it's good to, like, it's really hard to find that balance, but I'm self-aware. So when I do mess up, like, I let them know and I apologize for it.
Yeah, that's I heard someone say it's like you got to be a lion and a lamb. Right. Like you have to have the ability, like, Jordan Peterson talking about, like, you have to be capable, but in control. And I think that's necessary. Like, I don't disagree at all. Like, I think you definitely do need to be capable of being a warrior when necessary.
Yeah.
Right. Like you do need to have that ability, but then also at the same time, to be an effective leader, it's also important to show, not only are you able to handle whatever's thrown at you, but you don't really shy away from anything either, right? Like, you're not hiding your emotions. If you have emotions, you feel them, you talk about them, you let them understand, because they're going to grow up to be men too. And so you have to model for them the type of man that you are and that they could be.
Exactly. Like, you can tell them, you can speak to your blue in the face, Rod, right? But they're going to do what you do. They're going to regulate their emotions how you regulate your emotions, right? So something I've been working on a lot is just like my temper, because my dad raised me, punch holes in walls, yell, scream. You know, that's how you're a man. But I realize that's not a man, right? That's weak. If you can't control your emotions, that is weak. But like you said, there are times where you do need to let those emotions out and be that warrior, but not on a daily basis.
Yeah. Yeah. You gotta demonstrate emotional discipline, right? Like you have to have the ability to, but the restraint to keep it in when necessary, right? Like Bruce Lee is talking about, like you have to be able to be, you gotta have the skill to do the things that Bruce Lee was able to do, but then also you gotta be calm and collected and not use those weapons that you know you could use when you need to use them.
Exactly.
I think that's like a really, really important thing, especially now because of, you know, all the things that are going on. And, you know, people will say masculinity is in crisis and you have the alpha male ideal and all these things that are going on. And just understanding that being an alpha male isn't a bad thing unless that's all you are, right? If that's all you are, that's an issue, right? Like when even water, right? Like anything can be toxic if you have too much of it, right? You drink too much water, it could kill you, right? Water's obviously good for you, but if you have too much water, it'll put you in a hospital, right? Mm-hmm. And the same thing goes for your masculinity. It is great to be masculine. It's great to be a masculine man. And in fact, you should be. But if masculinity is all you have, like you mentioned, being a little bit more caring and maybe even say a little bit more feminine with your sons at certain times, like if all you greet them with is masculinity when they need something else from you, then that's toxic, right? Not masculinity 100%. Itself, but how you show up in those situations is toxic for the situation.
Exactly, bro. So like the other day, my son, I'm with my fiance right now as their stepmom. The other day, my son, it was his birthday on last Wednesday, and he hasn't seen his mom in like over a year just because she's not okay. She's getting help. And he just broke down in tears for like 10 minutes. Right. And that's the time where I needed to be like that feminine side for him and be there. And my fiance has taught me a lot about doing that. And that's why it's important, I think, to have like a partner who will call you out like on your BS. Right. So when I'm maybe being a little bit too aggressive or hard on them, especially my older one, she can call me out and she gives me like a different perspective to view things through.
Yeah. So as most kids do, are your sons pretty different personality wise?
Oh yeah. Like night and day. Yeah.
It's funny. My daughters, are very much alike in a lot of ways, but not in a lot of ways as well. Like my youngest is, I would say they're tough in different ways, but my youngest is probably tougher, but she's the most emotional, which is interesting, right? Yeah. Like she doesn't like, she hurt herself. She plays softball and she got hurt at practice last week or 2 weeks ago. And she just toughed it out. Like it was the beginning of practice. I saw it happen, but she didn't say anything. She kept going. She limped through the whole practice. And then at the end, I asked her, I was like, what's going on with your leg? And she's like, it hurts so bad, Dad. It hurts so bad. And then she starts crying in the car. And I'm like, well, why didn't you say anything? She's like, I didn't want anybody to see me hurt. And I didn't want them to see me cry. So I was like, but you didn't have to cry. Like you could have just told us and we could have made some adjustments.
Yeah.
But like that, in that way, she's super tough. But whereas my oldest would have definitely been like, yo, hey guys, my leg, yo, I'm gonna shut it down for the rest of practice. I'm out of here. Uh-huh. And she wouldn't have cared at all about people like seeing her hurt or seeing her cry. But then in different ways, like they show different versions of themselves. And it's always so interesting to see them grow up and change and do different things. But I was just curious, are your boys a little different as well?
Yeah, they are. They're kind of similar to what you said. I would say like my oldest one is just a little bit, I don't know. He doesn't show his emotions as much, right? His spectrum of emotions like really stays like in the middle for the most part. All I have to do is like give him like a stern look and he'll like do what I asked him to do. Right.
Yeah.
My youngest one, he's super sweet, super emotional. And we'll use that. He'll use like the hugs and the kisses to like manipulate you. But he also like can go to the other end of the spectrum as well. And I can tell he's going to be the one that challenges us a little bit more as like a teenager, right? Because like he'll just like, I'll tell him something, he'll just literally laugh in my face sometimes, and it makes me so good. but that's why you have to be able to parent differently, you know, because the things that work with Anthony, they're not going to work with Angelo, and he's not going to respond to the things the same way. So you have to be able to take different angles, different perspectives to get a similar result from different personalities.
Yeah, yeah. And then that's one of the important things of like having conversations like this and you know, talking to other dads, because you may be well equipped to parent one of your children just naturally, right? Like you just are just naturally able to parent one of them just because they fit into your personality already. But then you get that second or that third child is like a wild card. And you're like, yo, I don't know what to do with this kid. I can't, I don't know how to parent them the way that I parent. But then if you reach out to somebody who has a kid that's also a wild card, and you're like, hey, how did you do it? Like, what are you doing? How is that working out for you? Like, oh, I'm gonna try that. You know, let me see that thing that you do, and I'm gonna try that and see if it works for me. Because otherwise, and I feel the same way with me and my sisters. Like my parents, I feel like we have different parents. Let me say that, right? Like me and my youngest oldest, all my sisters are older than me, but my youngest oldest sister, we're like a year and a half apart, and which is really close. Like we've always kind of been really close, right? But they parent her completely different than they parent me, right? And it's like who is that guy? Why is dad talk to you like why is he letting you do this? Like he never let me do anything like that. Like why is mom so like my mom is really, she's really like overly nurturing to me, but she's tougher on my sister, and I see it, right? She'll let her do anything. She'll do anything for her or whatever, but I see that she wants more out of her, so she pushes her harder. Whereas my dad is super lenient on her and like lets her do anything, and he's tough on me, right? And so like, man, we got like mismatched parents. Like I always say, your parents and my parents. Like I don't know what your parents are doing, but my parents are different. And it's been like that our whole lives. It's like, and I don't think any one of us ever like took offense to it. Like one of them was treating us better or whatever. Mom treats you better than she treats me. It was just like, this is our experience with our parents, and this is how they are with us, and that's fine because we both know that they love us, but they had to be different versions of themselves for us.
Definitely. I think that's similar too, like the dads being harder on the boys and the moms kind of being harder on the girls, you know?
Yeah. It's funny though, because it just, as we get older, and because both of them are the softest thing in the world to my kids. Like they, I don't even know who my dad is when he's with my daughters. Like he's
that's what grandpas and grandmas are for, man. You know,
he's like soft serve, man. I'm like, who are you, bro? Toughen up. Like, push that little kid down or something, rough her up, wrestler or something, man. Like so giving him money every time he sees him, and like, it's all kinds of stuff. But, so as your boys get older, a nine-year-old, what grade is that? Fourth grade, fifth grade?
He just started fourth. Yeah, he just started fourth.
That's a good time, man. That fourth, fifth grade is a fun age. Like there's a lot going on, and they start kind of experiencing the world a little bit differently. They're getting out of that little kid phase. They're starting to become big kids. So as they get older, and I always like to ask, you know, boy dads, this is, do you have any designs or any ideas on like rites of passage or like, you know, conversations that you want to have with your son as he's becoming a man? And I know they're young for that now, but like just thinking forward, do you have any ideas on what you may want to do?
I do. I haven't had this conversation with them yet, and I will have to have it like somewhat soon, because like they say, hey, dad, I found your video on YouTube Shorts, and I found this and that, because people take my stuff and repost it on different platforms. And so I'm going to have to share with them sooner than later. But just my story, my background, they know that dad used to have a completely different life. Dad didn't used to be the way that he is now. Dad changed his mindset through changing his body, right? But they don't know like the drugs, the full story, you know, how my father raised me, right? So I've been thinking about it for years, about like how I'm going to frame that conversation to my kids. And the only way to do it is just to be 100% honest and transparent. And like, hey, like if you decide to go down this path and use these substances and do like, this is what your life will be like. You may be able to get away with it for 25 years, like my dad did somehow, but he didn't end his life very well. He ended his life alone, no money, no nothing. So that's eventually where drugs and alcohol will lead you one way or another.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's an important conversation to have. And you mentioned earlier that you and your dad kind of fell out. Did you guys reconcile, and did he end up having a relationship with your kids?
Yeah. So like somewhat of a relationship. I wouldn't say like major. He saw him a couple times a year. We did end up reconciling like 4 or 5 years later. It was at the time I had nowhere to go, right? My mom wouldn't take me. My friends wouldn't take me. Like I had to call my dad. I hadn't talked to him in years. I'm like, yo, like I need somewhere to go or I'm going to be on the streets. So we did end up like reconciling after that. And it was kind of like a shell of a relationship of what we had before. I kind of kept him ever since I got clean. I kind of kept him at like an arm's length purposefully. Right. And then when I got the call that he passed a couple of weeks ago, I kind of wished I did make more attempts to like reach out and be with him. But at the same time, I also had to protect like my mental headspace as well. Right. So he used so many drugs and partied so long for 65 years. He wasn't there anymore. You know, he was a shell of himself.
Yeah. Was he still yeah. partying and all that kind of up until he passed?
Yeah, I wouldn't say he's partying like crazy hard anymore, but like he was prescribed Xanax and like Seroquel. Oh, okay. And when we went to his place, there was beer bottles everywhere and things like that. So he was, you know, still like self-medicating but I don't think he was in a position anymore to like party like he used to.
Yeah. Well, man, I'm super, super glad that you were able to overcome that. And I think rightfully so, keeping them at a distance to protect yourself and protect your progress is you know, what's necessary. Yeah. I think, you know, there's always going to be when someone passes, even if you spend a whole lot of time with them. Right. Even if you were there every day, there's always going to be like, dang, I could have said, or I should have done, or I could have.
Yep.
There's always those things. Right. Because we are just as people are going to look for those times where we could have done more or done better. Right.
Yeah. And I have that with my brother. So my brother actually passed from an overdose.
Oh, man.
3 years ago. Yeah, man. So it's been a rough couple of years, like family wise and everything. But, you know, I remember, so I lived with him at the time and he was 2 years sober and I knew he kind of started to like fall back off. And when he came home that night, like I knew he went to go pick up. I knew he went to go use. Mm-hmm. But it was like midnight when he got home, I was about to go to bed and I knew I would have to physically fight him to like get those, you know, get that away from him. And I just didn't have it in me. And I woke up the next day to him on his floor. So that's been really hard for me to like, fuck, man, like, what if I said something? What if I tried? What if I did something? But I know the outcome one day, one way or another, most likely would have probably, you know, been the same. But it is hard kind of thinking back, like, fuck, I wish I did something more.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, hindsight is always, you know, always 20/20. Like, the puzzle is always easier to understand when you work it backwards, but it's meant to be moved forward. And so you have to just kind of take that as a lesson and continue to push forward. And I know you are. I'm not qualified to make any of this as advice. I'm just speaking,
in
the moment. Yeah. You know, it's just moving forward and doing the best that you can with what you have in front of you, I think is what we all have to do when we're faced with grief in these ways, you know, especially when it's really close to us. Because no one's really ready for that, right? Like even when you have like older parents, right, and you're like, oh, it's you know, we're getting close to the end, you're not ever really ready for it when it comes. But you know, I'm sure you can lean on some really good memories and really good things that you got from them, and you'll see flashes of things he used to do in your children, and you'll be like, oh man, like, you know, just things that'll remind you of them, and those are the things that we hold on to.
Exactly. I got the 2 years sober with him and he was like in and out of prison. He did like 5 or 6 years, multiple stints. And so like, I never thought I was going to get like that 2 years with him. So that's what I tried to focus on. Like the 2 years that I got to live with him, he was clean, sober. and the relationship that my boys got to build with him during that time.
Yeah, that's awesome. That, I mean, again, those are the things that you carry on, right? Because those are things that matter.
Yep.
Right. Awesome. So you have another brother though, right?
I do. I have another brother. He's like 24. His name is Nick.
Okay, the young guy, right? So there's just the three boys?
No, and I have two sisters as well. So I'm the oldest of five.
Oh, wow. Wow. How is that? I'm the youngest of five. So how is being the oldest of five?
Yeah, there's definitely, you know, some pros and cons. So it was me, my sister, and my brother within like a 4-year span. And then they waited like 10 years and they had my brother and my sister. So they were kind of, I wasn't there as much. I was like in college when they were growing up for the most part. But yeah, man, it was good. I like being the oldest, I think.
Yeah. Do you still play big brother? You still have those big brother vibes?
Yeah, definitely. We just got back from a family vacation in the Outer Banks. So yeah, for sure. I still hold that authority.
That's funny, man. Cause my oldest sister is, I've got four sisters, so I'm the only boy and I'm the youngest. Oh, and the oldest is like, you know, you're not my mom old lately. Like you were pretty much gone by the time I came along. So like, she tries to parent all of us, which is interesting. Even now, like I'm 40, like you got to let that go.
Right.
All right. So I got a couple of questions that I for sure want to ask you. And especially, you know, with the work that you do, this is obviously a fatherhood podcast and we've talked about fatherhood. We've talked about a bunch of stuff, but we talked about you as a father and we talked about your father. But what does fatherhood mean to you?
Yeah. Fatherhood means to me just like leading by example, right? Becoming the best version of yourself physically, mentally, spiritually, financially, so you can pass good generational traits along to your children. So many men today, I feel like, seek way too much comfort, right? All they care about is comfort, right? Like Netflix, junk food, sleeping in, and that's not where like true joy, contentment, purpose is found. I think we've been like lied to by society, right? Like, and our brains tell us like, oh, like sleep in, watch Netflix. But are you ever happy after you do those things? Are you ever like, oh yeah, I feel so much better now? No, you're not. But like, will you be happy after this podcast, right? After spreading a positive message? So I really think fatherhood is just leading by example and showing your kids that doing hard things and adversity is the way, rather than, you know, shying away from those things.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. Like the leading by example is crucial. And your Netflix or sleeping in thing. Like I was this past weekend was the first weekend in a long time I didn't have anything planned for the day. It was I think on Saturday. So I was like, oh, I'm gonna sleep in. I didn't though. I woke up because my body's clock won't allow me to sleep in. But I slept an extra 30 minutes. I slept like an extra 30 minutes and I was like, I was expecting to wake up like feeling refreshed and I was more tired. I'm like, damn, I should have just got up. Like just laying in the bed, the extra 30 minutes did nothing for me. I feel terrible now. And I think that happens a lot. Like my wife will come home sometimes from a long day and she'll be like, all right, I'm going to go take a nap before we do whatever we have to do that night. And then she always wakes up feeling worse. I'm like, why do you keep doing this? Like, you'd be better off if we just attacked whatever we had as soon as you got home. Let's just go get it done. And then you can go to bed, maybe go to bed earlier. Right. But that nap in the middle of the day, that seeking comfort from the rough day that you had just never works out well.
Yeah, it really never does. And you just feel worse at the end of the day always. And you know, like sometimes you do need that rest. You do need to sleep in. But like I always like to say, like, plan it, right? Mm-hmm. Don't be like, oh, like I'm tired today. I'm going to skip my workout and take a nap. Like, no, go do your workout today because that's what you said you were going to do. And tomorrow, if you still feel like this, tell yourself you're going to take a rest day, right? And then 90% of the time when tomorrow comes along, you'd be like, nah, like I'm good. I'm ready to go. But you're not like giving into those instant feelings in that moment. and being like, okay, I don't feel like doing this. I'm going to take a nap, or I'm not going to work out. You postpone that. And if you can postpone the, like that feeling, that instant gratification, like I said, most of the time you're okay the next day and you can push through.
Yeah. Okay. So you have the Awakened Father, you're working with men, as a coach. If you have a message, and I'm sure you probably already have this queued up, like you have a message that you want all men to hear, or that maybe all men should hear. What is that message?
My message for men and fathers is that I talk to men every day. I get DMs every single day. I'm anxious. I'm stressed. I'm stuck. I'm frustrated, because it's a crazy balance between wanting to provide financially, wanting to be the best version of yourself, and also wanting to spend time with your family. Like, those three things, I think all men struggle to find the balance with, right? So my message to men just overall is that you have the ability to change anything at any point in time, right? You're powerful. You have that ability. But you have to make the decision. You have to make that step. You have to say, enough is enough. I'm tired of living this way, and take control and accountability of your own life. Because all you need, right? You can be, and I've experienced this a lot throughout my 6 years of transformation and being clean. You can fall off for a week or two and feel like you're so far off, right? And then just have a couple of days of getting back into that routine, and it can change your whole entire mindset. And like I said, that belief cycle, it'll change the actions that you're taking. It'll change the results that you're getting. It'll change the way that your wife looks at you. It'll change the way that your kids look at you, your coworkers. And you, man, have the ability to change that at any point in time. You just have to decide. And if you don't know what to do or how to do it, reach out to someone like myself or Rod to, you know, have a blueprint to follow along and get to your destination.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what? I think it's important to, you know, when we talk about like falling off, or we're not doing the thing that maybe we said we were going to do for a week or 2 weeks or a day or whatever it is that if you pull back on it, like if you can zoom out a little bit, that one day or that 1 week on the grand scheme of things, it's not as bad as we think it is. Right. Like, you're exactly. you're really not as far off or as far away from your goal as you think you are, because getting better isn't there's no time frame on that. There's no destination for that. It's a continuous effort. It's a continuous work. And so missing a day of doing, you know, maybe you had a checklist, you got to hit these five things that day, but whatever it is, right? And you only hit two of the five. You might consider that a failure, but that's better than a day where you hit none of them, right? So yeah, you didn't check off everything on the list, and that's one day you didn't do it. But as long as you never make it 2 days, right? Like, you don't go 2 days in a row, or you work to not make it 2 days in a row, then you're okay, right? You're gonna get back on track. And I think that's a really important thing, especially for guys who are working on being better in one of those fields, whether it be financially, mentally, physically, emotionally.
Yeah.
To understand is that it doesn't have to be perfect. And in fact, it won't be perfect. But the progress and the pursuit of it needs to still be there.
Dude, exactly, man. Like, your mind will play tricks on you, and it'll make it seem like you're so much farther away, when really you're just a couple of good days in a row of feeling the exact same way you felt before you kind of fell off track. And that's what I think men get caught up. I do sometimes as well, like, hey, thinking too much instead of just like taking action, like putting your shoes on and just going.
Yep. Okay. So now let's take that same idea, right? We've got a message that we're putting out into the world, except this one's a little bit more private, right? Not everybody's going to see it. This is a message that you have for your sons. What do you want them to hear?
Yeah. So first and foremost, for my sons, I want to let them know that I love them, right? I love them more than anything. They changed my life forever. And I'm the man that I am because of them. And everything I do is for them and to create a better world for them. And that they're always good enough. They can do anything that they set their mind to, no matter what, as long as they put in consistent effort every single day. That's the main message I want to give my kids, that they're loved, they're worthy, and that they're good enough.
I think that's great, right? I think that's more than enough, right? If you if we, even as fathers and as men, right, if we knew those things, right, if we knew that we were loved, if we knew that, you know, we were worthy and we knew that we were enough, I think that would change the lives of everyone, right, of a lot of the men that are listening. Yeah. And a lot of the world in general, right? I think there's far too many of us that don't feel loved, that don't feel worthy, and definitely ask the question, am I enough? I think that's one of the things that I hear most often, especially with the younger dads that I work with, like the newborn baby dads or expecting dads. There's this question of, am I going to be enough? Like, I don't know how to do it. I've never done this dad thing before. Am I going to be enough? And the answer is yes, right? Because you are exactly what your kid needs, right? You, it's a miraculous how you figure it out, but you figure it out, right? That kid lets you know exactly what they need from you. You just have to be receptive to it, and you are definitely enough. But that's a great message to have for your kids, man. I think I'm sure they feel that from you. I'm sure that you let them know that. And so that's going to be really powerful for them going forward.
I appreciate that, Rob. Thank you, my man.
Yeah, yeah. So if guys are wanting to reach out to you, if they're wanting to find you, to contact you, they got questions, they resonate with some of the things that you're saying, how would they go about doing that?
Yeah, so I'm on Instagram, you know, YouTube, Facebook at The Awakened Father. You can find me using that handle. If you're, you know, go through some of my content, see if some of it resonates with you. If it does, and you feel like we're a potential good fit to work together, to get you to your best self, just shoot me a DM. We'll hop on a discovery call again, just see if we're a good fit to work together. I am selective in the people who I bring on. You got to make sure, you know, you're not going to like bring down the community. You're going to be a positive, like-minded guy who's ready to, you know, make the best version of themselves. But just shoot me a DM, man. We'll hop on a call and, you know, see if we're a good fit.
Awesome. Awesome. So fellas that are listening, I know some of you guys are listening while you're driving or listening at the gym or, you know, listening as background while you're doing work. Make sure you go follow him, right? Make sure you check out some of those YouTube videos. And like you said, if it resonates, shoot him a DM, right? Reach out and at least ask the questions, right? At least figure out if you guys are a good fit and maybe he can share some things with you that are going to put you in the right space, in the right place, right? Jimmy, I appreciate exactly. You taking the time, man. I really thank you for taking the time out of your day and sharing with us your journey and fatherhood, your experiences. And I'm sure that, you know, I'm going to take some things away from it. I'm sure that the guys that are listening are going to be able to take some of this and go back and father in a new way or maybe a more improved way or even if it's just a self-reflection of looking at how they're doing things. And either being content with the way that things are going or going, hey, man, I need to do this a little bit better. I appreciate you taking the time.
Hey, thanks so much for having me, Rod. It was a pleasure, man.
Yeah, absolutely. So I look forward to talking to you soon. And, you know, fellas, make sure you hit that follow button and I'll talk to you guys soon.
Thanks, guys.
All right. So it's.